The Princes of Asgard and the Craftsmen by Melithril. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Chapter 1. Tony knew almost everything that happened at S.H.I.E.L.D. He used to know more up until Nick employed a strict "if you idiots don't want Stark to know, don't file it electronically" policy. When it came to the Princes of Asgard, Tony knew the exact extent of the containment plans in place in case they ever went off the rails. Thor Odinson, see Avengers Initiative, Son of Odin, see File, and Frigga, see File, First Prince and Heir to the Throne of Asgard, see Nine Realms, do not engage, evacuate civilians within a 300-mile, 482.8-kilometer radius, inform the Sorceress Supreme, Ancient One, see File, activate the Hulk and the rest of the Avengers Initiative to remove Thor Odinson from Earth. Do not banter, do not insult, be polite, and use diplomacy. Avoid the use of technology based on electricity. See File, Thor, God of Thunder. Do not engage. Loki Laufeyson, see File, Son of Laufey, see File, and Fodor Buti, see File, Ward of Odin, see File, and Frigga, see File, Second Prince of Asgard, see Nine Realms, heir to the throne of Jotunheim, see Nine Realms, Asgard's ambassador in Alfheim, see Nine Realms, and Vanaheim, see Nine Realms. Do not engage. Originally, Agent Cohen had written "do not under any circumstances mess with Thor," until Coulson caught it. Tony still wished they had kept it, because he still remembered the first time he had met Thor's adoptive brother. The threat had been some ancient foe of Asgard with an unpronounceable name. Thor and the Warrior Three, as well as Lady Sif, had all told all humans, including Captain America and the Hulk, to stay back. They had engaged the creature, Magic Wielder, thousands of miles away for the next human settlement, which had been wise because within minutes the place had looked like a nuclear weapons testing site. The Warrior Three and Lady Sif were critically injured, not standing a chance against the ancient magic. Alien technology, magic, who the hell knew? And Thor was in trouble. "Asking for permission to engage, sir," Steve demanded urgently. "Thor needs our help." "And what exactly are you planning to do, Captain Rogers?" asked Fury viciously. "Throw your shield at the thing? Permission denied. Stark!" Tony, who had been watching the battle through a monitor, biting his lips, while simultaneously listening in on the conversation between Nick and Steve, turned his head towards the Avengers and the Director of S.H.I.E.L.D. "Yes?" "Please tell me you have some weapon in store to deal with that," said Fury, as he gestured at the screen, looking unusually rattled. "No." "Excuse me, Stark?" Fury whispered disbelievingly. "No, I don't. You see the same thing I do, right? Every blow causes it to grow stronger. If we launch, oh, let's say, the Jericho, the thing will be twice the size it is now. It is not of this world and does not really play within the realms of the known laws of physics. It is made of magic, and I don't know magic, as much as I hate to admit that. Thor, according to his own admission, does not know too much about magic either. I am not launching an attack if I cannot calculate what consequences that may have." "Oh, God, Thor was hit!" Everyone in the control room froze. Tony cursed. Looking back at the screen confirmed Agent Simmons' horrified statement. Thor had taken a heavy blow and was not getting up again. "No!" The scream did not seem human. It echoed from both the transmission and from around them. The perfectly functional screen flickered as the air split and a thin, black-haired man, or male-looking alien-like being, stepped onto the battlefield. Later, Tony would meet a composed, dangerously smart, sarcastic son of a married frost giant with a positively vicious humor when it came to pranks, who would gently smile at you when he skinned you both verbally and, if you managed to truly piss him off, physically. But on that day, what he had seen was Loki when he feared for his brother's life. One look was enough for the newcomer to become aware of what was happening. What followed was difficult to describe. The man literally teleported to Thor's side, his right hand on the warrior's chest, with his eyes wide and terrified. As he looked up to face his adversary, there was a dangerous snarl, and the screen flashed green for a second before it turned black. Later analysis showed that there had been an EMP blast strong enough to turn off satellites, as Loki unleashed his wrath on the creature that had almost killed his brother. "What happened? I want eyes on these two now," bellowed Fury, for once looking as angry as his name implied. "Jarvis, help me out," said Tony calmly as he approached the next computer panel and got lost in the only world that still made sense, the realm of coding. Localizing them was not a problem because whatever the newcomer had done, it was like an electromagnetic black hole. You only knew it was there because there was nothing there. Having expected that, he used that unique data as a target point for several probes he had developed years ago, though they had been upgraded to not only alternately work on solar and water power, but also on tiny arc reactors. They had been built with the idea to survive the blast of 10 nuclear bombs in order to collect data where no human could ever hope to go. "I've got a visual, Nick," Tony announced. He did not bother with nicknames when it came to the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. Being called by his first name already annoyed him to no end. What they saw was, frankly, terrifying. The newcomer looked tiny compared to their latest enemy, but it was the creature that was in trouble. The black-haired man opened his arms wide, and, as if someone slashed a knife across a painting, the air split open, revealing nothing but darkness on the other side. Keeping his left arm to the side, the man sorcerer pushed his right arm towards the creature in a similar manner as Tony when he activated the gauntlet. As if the right arm had hit the creature's chest, telekinesis? It fell through the crack in the atmosphere, which was sealed only a second later. The newcomer lowered his arms and swayed a bit before he fell down on one knee, breathing heavily. That moment of weakness was over within an instant, however, and the victor, who had to be that brother, Loki? Lopter? Luca? Thor kept mentioning, was beside the fallen god of thunder almost instantly, putting his hand on his chest. He had his eyes closed in green mist. Energy? Enveloped his supposed brother's head and chest. Tony did not wait for Fury's order. It was time to roll. As he turned around, the Iron Man armor assembled around him. "Dr. Harper," he said grimly into S.H.I.E.L.D.'s open channel, "I hope your teams are already in the air." "Yes, Dr. Stark," came the expected very calm reply. "ETA, 10 minutes. "Good. I'll be with you in 5. As he stepped off the platform and flew away, Jarvis transmitted the discussion in the control room, in which Fury explained to Steve why the Avengers would not be called on scene. "Captain Rogers, this is not a S.H.I.E.L.D. operation. Paramilitary crack teams and top ambassadors with enough power to level a mid-sized planet don't mix." "Sir? I don't understand." "This has to be Loki, Thor's brother. Ambassador in 2 of the most powerful realms apart from Asgard. Given Thor's strength, I don't think his little brother is even half a step behind, especially given he just got rid of some enemy that almost killed Thor." "I apologize for interrupting, sir," said Steve, and Tony rolled his eyes. He never apologized when he interrupted Tony. Okay, he did tend to ramble without taking the time to breathe more often than not. "But Thor is our teammate and friend. Lady Sif, Fandral, Hogan, and Volstagg have been our allies from the beginning. We have to make sure they are okay." "I'm not sure if you are Loki's allies, though." "That is my whole point. Dr. Harper is qualified to handle the situation. I am sure Loki has some sort of respect for healers, given he is currently taking care of his brother." "Why did you let Stark go, then? That man is unpredictable on a good day." Tony activated autopilot for a moment so he could close his eyes. That hurt. Okay, they had bickered a bit more viciously than usual this morning, after Thor and his friends had left the rest of the Avengers behind. But still, things had been better since their truly catastrophic first meeting. "I trust Iron Man to do his job." "Iron Man, yes. Tony Stark, not recommended." Tony briefly wondered if that would ever stop stinging. He was Iron Man, wasn't he? "This is not his first assignment with Dr. Harper. They work well together," Fury continued. That was true. He liked Simon. He was a great guy. Speaking of. Lovely afternoon, fellas. Wonderful weather today, isn't it? Blue skies and the ground's green as far as the eye can see, except for that black hole we are approaching. Not a literal one, mind you. Thank God for small mercies. He said through the microphone as he waved at the shield pilots who were flying the jet of the medical team. He figured that if the Avengers could have a jet, so should the medics, instead of that old chopper they used to fly with, because lives depended on them arriving ASAP. Good afternoon, Dr. Stark, said Simon. Just in case you haven't been watching the situation since your departure from headquarters, nothing has changed much. The person who seems to be Prince Thor's brother has been working on him in silence for... Oh, he's lifting his head. Tony activated the cameras in question. Indeed, Loki was looking up, his expression furious. Sorceress Supreme! Tony winced at the unexpected volume. Familiar yet eerie golden circles appeared and the Ancient One stepped through, and Tony was as afraid of her as he had been the day he'd met her. Grandmaster Loki, said the lady, lowering her head in. Holy shit, was that respect? Even fear in her eyes? Keep them alive, the suddenly by far more terrifying sorcerer gritted through his teeth. She nodded and approached the Warrior Three and Lady Sif. Surely you understand why I could not interfere, she began as she drew her golden circles and other geometric shapes near the unconscious warriors. Sorceress Supreme, hissed Loki. And Tony metaphorically patted his shoulder for the quality of his tech, which was good enough to unmistakably transmit a whisper. His eyes still focused on his brother's chest. If you believe that you aided Midgard in any way by keeping... He pronounced the name of the creature, which vaguely resembled the sound people made when they tried to pronounce the stream of letters produced after their cat had walked across the keyboard. Away from pulling this realm apart at the seams, you should know that what she... Oh, that creature was female? Thor did not say. Would have done is nothing compared to what I will do if my brother dies due to your neglect. The rest of the Order is powerful enough to protect Midgard from the dangers it faces daily. Your aid was not needed. You chose not to help, just as you chose not to help when a portal opened with the help of an Infinity Stone and you decided not to lift a finger. Endanger my brother a third time, and I will eviscerate you. Tony swallowed dryly. Okay, he cleared his throat. We will land about a football field away from them. Make sure they see us approach. I'll go first. When I say run, you leave.
Yes, Dr. Stark, was Simon's solemn reply. They landed as discussed. When the teams were ready, one led by Dr. Simon Harper himself, the other by Dr. Aileen Carter, they began to slowly approach the center of the battlefield. Tony's suit had confirmed that the area, while burned, showed no increased levels of radiation or toxins. Therefore, it was safe to approach the wounded warriors without additional protective gear. In an attempt not to seem threatening, and because it probably would not do much anyway, Tony had slipped out of the armor. As they approached, they heard Loki cursing at his brother. If you die, I swear I will personally bring you back from hell, only so that I can kill you again. Oh, thank the Lord, exhaled Tony, causing Green Eyes to look at him sharply.
If you are cursing at him, that means he'll live, right? Said Tony, as friendly and casually as he could manage.
I am Tony Stark, and these are Doctors Harper and Carter, whose names, I just realized, almost rhyme, which was not the intention, I assure you. Anyway, they are S.H.I.E.L.D.'s finest doctors. Is there anything we can do? Loki did not say anything. Almost eerie green eyes, as cold as ice, held Tony's gaze calmly. A gasp from Thor had them all look at the fallen warrior.
Loki? The Asgardian whispered.
Right beside you, you fool. Loki's tone was harsh and cold, but Tony did not miss the gentle way his hand moved through his brother's hair. The engineer had to look away. He knew that gesture. It was Pepper's patience and firm, tender confidence mixed with Rhodey's overprotective mother hen tendencies, all merged into one motion of affection.
Our foe, is she?
Not slain, but gone for now. She will not bother with us for the next 2,000 years. 3,000 if the Shadow Realm does not become her. The grin was positively diabolical, and Tony knew where the mischief, evil rumors in Norse mythology came from.
Why did you not? Thor began, but started to cough painfully.
Oh, by the Norns.
Don't speak, idiot.
Loki's tone now matched Thor's timber in its softness. It was either kill her and lose you, or banish her, and still retain the strength needed to stitch your insides back together, literally.
His left hand was on his brother's chest, and fine threads of gold-green magic enveloped the God of Thunder's torso and head. A sigh escaped Thor's lips.
Better?
Better,
Thor replied with a relieved sigh, his eyes firmly closed. Loki did not look up as he addressed the Midgardians.
There is not much you can do. But could you or your healers keep him some company, Tony Stark? They may clean and bind superficial wounds. I have not been able to work on the small injuries yet.
Tony nodded, and Aileen immediately checked on her patient with the help of her team. As Loki rose to his feet in one elegant movement and... holy shit! His thin stature really disguised just how tall the guy was. He moved towards the Warrior Three, thanking the Ancient One coolly, while also dismissing her within the same sentence. Any time, Grandmaster. This was the first time that Tony had ever heard something like petty annoyance clouding her usually composed appearance. Apparently the tone did not go unnoticed, because Loki smiled dangerously.
You do know what they say about high horses, my dear Sorceress Supreme, said Loki as he put his hand on Volstagg's chest.
I am sure you know more about horses than I do, Grandmaster Loki.
Tony quickly stepped in front of the others and was about to call his armor, just in case the God of Mischief would take offense in the Svaldifari reference. To his surprise, Loki started giggling. It was an unexpectedly cheerful and innocent sound.
People are still hung up on that story after so many years. Oh, not so, Ancient One. You who scoff at the Dark Dimension... well, you practically reek with it, should know better than to believe in tales told by those consumed with jealousy. Go back to your temple of worshippers and faithful followers, you who claim not to keep any secrets while you drown in them.
He laughed again, and it was not a particularly nice sound.
Go. Thank you for preserving my friends' lives, even if it was only meant to preserve yours.
The Ancient One swallowed dryly, but kept her composure as she drew her golden portal and stepped through it. Without another word.
Not a friend of yours, I gather, said Tony, as casually as he could muster. Oh, I like her just fine. It is the hypocrisy that I cannot stand. I may be called Loki Lysmith, but I...
No, coughed Volstagg, his eyes barely open. You are Loki, son of Asgard and Jotunheim, preventer of wars and most trusted advisor of Thor. The most naturally gifted among the magic wielders of the Nine Realms, master of the flying knives with a mean left swing on top of that. More importantly, you are my friend, and you have saved all our lives once again. Thank you.
That little speech seemed to stun Loki. His hand had stilled, and he stared at the warrior in front of him. The hesitation was only there for a moment, though.
If you think that will change the fact that you will not be able to eat anything for the next 24 hours, you are mistaken, old friend, whispered Thor's brother.
He leaned forward and kissed the man's forehead. Volstagg's eyes closed promptly, as if put out by a spell, which was a likely scenario.
Bind his chest, his ribs are broken, Loki ordered Nurse Taylor, who had patiently waited for her cue to help.
One by one, Loki healed the Warrior Three and Lady Sif. Tony quickly observed whom Loki counted as his friends, Volstagg followed by Fandral, followed by Hogan, and whom he counted as a friend through association rather than true affection, Lady Sif. More than that, it was clear whose life he cherished the most. Tony did not want to imagine what Loki would have done if Thor had died, but he knew for sure that Earth would have come out on the short end. In the end, however, Loki had saved the day, and he had remained on Midgard until his brother and his friends had fully recovered.
He returned several times after that, and in the absence of deathly peril, Loki was more than equipped of going up against Tony's verbal onslaughts as he returned quips in equal measure. Tony liked Thor's brother, and was slightly terrified of him. But outside of good-natured snark that bordered on the brink of civility, they hardly ever interacted, just like he hardly ever spoke to Thor unless it was about Avengers business. Neither had ever stepped a foot into Tony's life outside of S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters. As such, it had been a surprise to hear from Jarvis that they requested a meeting, and, even after setting a time and date, even more of a surprise to find both Loki and Thor in Stark Tower. "What can I do for you, my favorite princes?" asked Tony as he poured them a drink. Chapter 2. "Friend Stark," boomed Thor, with his usual golden retriever puppy-slash-grizzly-bear approach pulling him into a fierce hug. Startled, Tony hugged back. That was one hell of a chest that man had. Dr. Foster was apparently not only wonderfully superior in all things astrophysics, which again begged the question why on earth S.H.I.E.L.D. had neglected to call her in during the New York fiasco, also known as the Chitauri invasion, but also really, really brave. That reminded him that he really needed to contact her. If she found out from another source that Thor had visited Tony, without either of the two mentioning it to her, she would call Pepper, and Pepper would be disappointed with a capital D, and then he would tell her that they were friends first, and she would reply, "Gals before pals," or he would accuse her of doing so, and she would just look at him, and he would apologize, before sending Dr. Foster a new spectrograph as compensation, and then two broke girls, lady. He could swear she looked just like that actress, same personality type, too, would call him to say that she, too, deserved an apology gift for having to deal with sulking and a heartbroken boss, to which Dr. Foster would shout from the background that she was not sulking and tell her to stop harassing him. And hey, perhaps he should choose that option because at least these three ladies were only teasing him. He was getting tired of being side-eyed by every S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that was not the engineering, general science, or bring coffee and snacks to a starving genius department. The Avengers were not too happy with his newfound rapport with the Nidavellir ambassadors, openly muttering about concentration risks, or would, if any of them had a degree in economics or finances, and the unpredictability of this kind of partnership. Loki thankfully did not try to hug him, but instead accepted the glass of whiskey he had poured them and a cup of tea he had made for himself. He was cutting back, he told himself, to protect a liver that was put under enough strain already. But seeing Loki take a sip made his insides curl with envy. Hastily, he took a gulp of his far too hot tea and nearly scalded his tongue. Good. It would teach him not to think about alcohol. He needed to rid Stark Tower of all alcohol, though. Now that he had moved permanently here from the West Coast, his new cut back on the drinking rule had to be properly employed in Stark Tower as well. As if guessing his thoughts, the drinks vanished with a wave of Loki's hand and were replaced by two empty cups. "Brother!" Thor protested, but fell silent when the younger prince took the kettle and poured them both a cup. His movements were practiced and sure. Tony really missed Jarvis in this moment, the human one. Tea time was something he had always complained about as a child, but fiercely missed as an adult. "Not that I don't enjoy your presence, but neither of you have ever visited me here, and certainly not as a package deal, so what gives?" Tony did not see the point in beating around the bush. Loki smiled. "You have much to learn in terms of diplomacy, Anthony." "Okay, first, I can be diplomatic. I just usually ignore that option entirely. And second, ever since when are you calling me Anthony? Nobody calls me Anthony. Not even Jarvis called me Anthony." "Jarvis, the electronic soul Thor told me about." "No, Edwin Jarvis. He worked for my family for years," replied Tony, letting the whole soul thing slide. Jarvis was a person. And if Thor had to attribute a spirit or soul to accept that, then so be it. Like the real Jarvis, the AI was his conscience, his light in the dark. Unlike the real Jarvis, though, he was not a parental figure and rather a beloved friend that Tony looked up to. Paralleled only by Pepper, Happy, and Rhodey, of course. It was a sin not to list Rhodey. Thankfully, War Machine was safe,
and totally not on a peacekeeping mission in Somalia. Tony was not supposed to know that, so he did not. He missed him like crazy, though. He always had. Rhodey had his career, and Tony respected that, but that did not make him miss his brother any less. Looking at the two princes always made him think of Rhodey, because they were similar in terms that Thor and Loki, too, were brothers in all but blood, and that Tony would give everything he had if in return he could have grown up with the Rhodes family. "What is on your mind?" asked Loki, his head slightly tilted. "Just wondering how this adoption deal worked," replied Tony before he could keep his mouth in check. "It's very simple," answered Thor's brother. "Magic wielders are rare among the frost giants and highly respected. Imagine the joy of King Laufey and Queen Farbuti when their firstborn son had all the signs of a magic wielder, the first in many generations. Now I know you have heard of the existence of multiverses, and there are many ways this could have gone. Not only was I a magic wielder, but also one of stunted growth, so I could have rightfully been rejected from the warrior clans of Jotunheim and hidden away. Or the Asgardians could have invaded Jotunheim, robbing me to keep me as leverage with or without informing me of said action. Instead, with a heavy heart and the knowledge that the frost giants no longer knew how to train a true magic wielder, King Laufey and Queen Farbuti, or Queen Laufey and King Farbuti, gender is quite a fluid concept among the Jotun, decided to strike a peace treaty with King Odin. I would grow up in Asgard, under the tutelage of Queen Frigga, daughter of the royal family of Vanaheim, as heir to the throne of Jotunheim and brother to Thor, to make sure I would not forget my roots, and for Thor to expand his mind. We spent one quarter of our childhood among the frost giants of Jotunheim. Ultimately, as I grew older, it was decided that I would be the perfect mediator of the Nine Realms, and I spent several centuries with both the Vanir and the Elves of Alfheim in order to become an ambassador of Jotunheim and Asgard in Vanaheim and Alfheim. It was decided? Asked Tony, a bit surprised by the Jotun's honesty. How much do we firstborns get to choose their own fate, Anthony? Asked Loki, gesturing at his brother, Tony, and himself. They were all firstborns to their families. They all chose their paths to a certain extent, but ultimately their paths were all within the realm of what their parents designed for them in the beginning. Good point, replied Tony. You still haven't answered my question. A very wide smile graced Loki's lips, eyes practically radiating mischief. Very good, said the tall ambassador. Very good indeed. How have you fared since I left Midgard, friend Stark? Asked Thor, still not getting to the point. Good, actually. Master Elric is a hoot, and I can't wait to meet Master Carrick. He'll be arriving tomorrow together with a Master Neela, answered Tony honestly. Loki's head tilted to the side. Master Neela, he repeated in disbelief. Now that is an honor for the Midgardian realm I did not expect. She has not left Nidavellir for centuries. Master Elric alluded to that. She's the creator of all material, according to him, but did not elaborate. Yes, Master Neela and those she mentored create the metals the mastersmiths use for their purposes. Nobody knows more about... I am inclined to say the classical element, Earth, but I fear that a man of modern science like you would scoff at the notion. Hell, I've seen you literally open up a portal to another dimension. What we know of modern physics and chemistry ain't covering that, so I'll accept that explanation. Loki smiled, not bothering to cover up his delight as he caught his brother's gaze. Can we keep him?
Okay, stop, said Tony, a sliver of annoyance ringing in his voice despite his genuine amusement at Loki's antics. Are you giving me a hard time over getting along with Master Elric and the others? Is that it? That's not necessary. Everybody else seems to think that the prolonged exposure to me will somehow cause Nidavellir to completely abolish the treaty. Is that why you took a jab at my lack of diplomacy? Master Elric doesn't seem to care. Hell, he appreciated my forwardness, as he called it.
Of course he would. And yes, we are here because of the dwarves, but not for the reasons you imply, Thor chimed in. On the contrary, We know that you are the perfect liaison between Midgard and the lands of the dwarves.
Loki, on the other hand, frowned.
Who believes that you would not properly represent your world, or even cause strife between Nidavellir and Midgard?
Everybody, Tony replied plainly.
Shame coursed through his body as he admitted to that. He spent 2 hours in Fury's office after Master Elric departed, only to be down-talked by the Avengers, Fury, the World Security Council, and the UN representatives. Well, until Bruce told them all to lay off, because the Hulk was twitchy and didn't like what was happening, and that he personally thought I would improve our side of the treaty and not endanger it. His voice got all low and growly, too. It had been wonderful. Bruce may sometimes shy away from conflict, and in turn fail to step in when he should, but whenever he decided to do so, it was a sight to be seen.
Loki looked equal parts outraged and disgusted. He rose from his seat, thanked Tony for the tea, and asked him if he could invite the engineer to either a meal or some sort of performance, theater or musical, he had long desired to see. Because, well, Midgard appears to consist of more idiots than is healthy for a functional realm, you have an exquisite variety of artistic performances.
"Brother, what are you doing?" asked Thor, utterly surprised. "You said..."
"I know what I said, brother. I may have the second sight, but I am not a Midgardian medium that forgets as soon as something akin to true power courses through them." Loki was generally very good at hiding his opinion of Midgard, with Tony being one of the few who had partially managed to coax out of him that Midgard was not even a blip on the Jotun's radar.
"Then why are you turning your back now?"
"Because these ungrateful cretins don't even know what they're throwing away," hissed Loki back. "He made me see, truly see, Midgard for the first time. Your Dr. Foster, she is a marvel, but she was not enough. He challenged me, went toe-to-toe with me, met me on a battlefield of wits that he knew he was unlikely to win, not because he wished to annoy me, but because he needed to make me see humans, to see them as people, not unlike the Asgardians, the Jotuns, the Vanir, the Elves, the Dwarves, that despite their shorter lifespan, they were not less real than us, petty and arrogant, loud and obnoxious, bordering on self-destruction, surely. But then what higher species of the Nine Realms does not possess these features? He saw me that awful day. I almost lost you. And he knew that I did not see Midgard as worth my compassion, consideration, or protection. So he made me do just that. And in turn, they meet him with derision. By the Norns, I hope Master Neela invites him to Nidavellir, and I hope he decides to remain. Perhaps then Midgard will know what they lost due to their own actions." As soon as the irate Norse god ended his little speech, Tony could not help but laugh gently. 369 times.
"Excuse me?" asked Loki, who had found his composure within seconds, which made Tony think that this outburst was by far more controlled than it originally appeared. Now the god looked genuinely confused, however.
"I own a small island in..."
"Really doesn't matter," began Tony.
"It has all the equipment I need. I could go there, enjoy my life, do nothing but be the R&D department head of Stark Industries, or give up that position too, and just chime in as an occasional scientific consultant. I've thought about doing that 369 times since I took over Stark Industries, about retiring to that island, far away from everyone else, accepting only my friends as visitors."
"Why wouldn't you?"
"Because no matter how much I've tried, I am unable to simply not care. Doesn't matter how much it hurts sometimes."
A beat, then he sighed, feeling drained.
"Cats is currently playing on Broadway. You're invited if you wish. You'll like it."
Loki contemplated the offer before he nonverbally communicated with his brother.
"Daylight. I must wait for the sunrise. I must think of a new life. And I mustn't give in."
Damn it. Were Norse gods trained to sing professionally as well? Or was it a Jotun thing?
"It does not entirely fit you, Anthony. How could one wait for daylight when their soul shines as bright as a burning star?"
Tony could not help the derisive snort.
and he was relieved to see the Jotun's playful smile. "Where are you two in that metaphor?" Tony countered. "Oh, Thor will always be thunder and lightning, capable of setting ablaze Yggdrasil itself, and me? I am what existed before the universe took form, and will remain just that until the end of times." "The harbinger of bad metaphors?" Loki laughed, his eyes sparkling with genuine amusement before he answered, "Chaos." The end.